So as Tara said last night, the theme for this retreat is the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four ways of establishing mindfulness, the four domains or the areas of life, the four areas of direct experience that we have, that we use to cultivate a heightened sense of present moment awareness. And the Buddha taught lots of similes and metaphors and analogies because that often speaks more deeply into the psyche than just kind of, you know, explanations. And they often, they're evocative and they evoke feelings, emotions, images, ideas, inner resonance in very different ways sometimes. And so he had a kind of an analogy for these areas of developing mindfulness that I'm quite fond of. And he's described it this way, that as you go from the plains of India up into the mountains of the Himalayas, there's all these different vegetation types and different terrain. And if you go high up, apparently it's steep and craggy, lots of jagged rocks to fall off and cliffs and stuff. And for that high up like that, it's not a very safe place for monkeys because, you know, there's no trees to hold on to and so it can be dangerous. You don't see monkeys up there. If you come way down into the, start getting to the flats where there's not many trees and all that, it's also not dangerous. It is also dangerous for monkeys because there's people there. They can be seen easily. There's not trees to jump up and run away from, and they can get caught easily or hunted easily. But just a little bit up the foothills of the Himalayas where there were forests back then, that was a place where the monkeys could be safe. It was, go far enough in the forest, it's too difficult for the hunters to get in there. And but you don't go so high up that it starts being dangerous in the terrain. And there's this kind of sweet spot in the forest that the monkeys are safe. And the Buddha called that the monkeys' native country, their homeland. And that's where they're safe. And so using this analogy for the four foundations of mindfulness, he said, establishing awareness in these four areas is our homeland, is our native country, is our place to be safe. And the idea that it's our native country, our homeland, you know, that we find it in our awareness, the field of our present moment awareness can function as a place of safety for us, help us be safe, and also a place that is more than just a place that's safe, but a place that feels, has the comfort perhaps, the familiarity of a place where you can be yourself and be comfortable, and your homeland, your supposedly. And so in practicing Satipatthana, practicing mindfulness, we can see it as a journey back home. And I also like the, in addition to homeland, I like the analogy, the feeling of home. I know not all homes are safe or have given people safety, but so there's an association I have with being home is a place where you can just kind of lower your guard. You can go around in your pajamas and just kind of be as you wish in a relaxed, open way. And so the Satipatthana is a journey, it's kind of a journey home to ourselves, to being at home in ourselves, to be able to relax, to feel safe in ourselves, to be able to feel like we just be ourselves in an open and nice way, really who we are in our home. And so the Satipatthana is a kind of a journey, and it's an interesting journey home because it's a home you never left, but just that we lost touch with. And so we're going to get back in touch with it. We're going to rediscover it. We're going to wake up to what's here already. So it's not a long journey in terms of distance, but maybe it's a long journey in terms of time for some of us to arrive really back here at home. And the remarkable thing, one of the remarkable things about this journey that the Buddha taught It's a journey that uses our attentional faculties. We all have amazing capacities for perceiving, knowing, recognizing, observing this world that we're in. And we have a series of different faculties for this purpose. And so, for example, you know, I could use touch as a faculty of certain kind of perception or knowing, and touch this book and feel the, and even with a touch, I can feel different sensations, probably different nerves for it. I can do temperature and smoothness and hardness and roughness and all kinds of things. I can also observe the book with my eyes and see it, and keep a very safe distance from these dangerous books, and just to keep it there. Maybe we won't open it today, and just, you know, just observe it. Or I could also, I could recognize what the book is. I can look down at this book, and not only is it a book, this is the middle-length discourses of the Buddha. Wow. It's one of my favorite Buddhist texts. And so I can clearly recognize what it is. And so I can know all these different things about it. I can recognize in the moment these attentional faculties are operating. And we have many of them. And they're all marshaled together for the purposes of waking up and being really here in the present moment. And the path of mindfulness practice, the journey of mindfulness practice, its journey home, is a journey of awakening or strengthening or discovering a form of almost lucid awareness. Awareness that's very powerful and clearly here. A sense of being aware that's as strong as you see the book or as you experience anything or know anything, you know that you're aware. And there are a few times in life when that we kind of just get almost shocked into kind of a lucid awareness, and we know that we're aware. I've been in car accidents, near car accidents, where as soon as it was over, boy, was I aware. I just like, I'm here. I'm, you know, like my senses were, all the senses were, maybe the adrenaline, right? The senses were, you know, heightened, and there's a clear sense of present moment awareness. I'm not thinking about, you know, what happened last year. Or I'm just like, I'm here, boy. And there's other, you know, there maybe using example of a near accident is not a good one, but there's other things, right? That things happen that we're like, wow. And so here we're cultivating that sense, almost like a wow of, you know, and it's not a wow of something unusual. It's a wow of clarifying or heightening or purifying our capacity for awareness, our capacity for attention that we have. And an example of this kind of clarifying process, I was reminded recently of how it was for me when I started meditating in college. I'm meditating twice a day, and I started meditating because I was suffering and had various social problems. And I thought that meditation would help me with my suffering and my social problems that I had, the personal challenges. And so I started meditating twice a day, 40 minutes each time, morning and evening. And after a while, what happened to me was my concern about my suffering, my search, and my questions about my interpersonal life that I had, it started to kind of fade away. Nothing was resolved, nothing was fixed, but I no longer had the questions and the concerns swirling around my head, and the mind got quieter. I didn't stop thinking, but it got quieter. But more important than not thinking, I wasn't centered in my thinking anymore. It wasn't that my thinking was the center of my little universe. It became more of an adjunct thing going on. And what became the center became my body and the awareness of being here in a very alert, embodied way. And there was a sense of a kind of bubbling up or wellspring within me. Back then, I called it a sense of integrity. I probably hardly knew what the word meant, but that was the kind of the word that I chose for it. And a sense of being at home, a sense of wholeness, a sense of being settled, something that started to heal a lot of the wounds and divisions that I had lived under growing up. And it was a remarkable feeling, a sense of being at home and being at peace. And it didn't happen because of I solved my problems. And even to this day, because I'm still a slow learner, I'm having to learn this lesson over and over again. I can go around my day and have certain kind of concerns that I have and swirling around trying to figure something out and solve something that I have to deal with or something, thinking it's really important. And then I'll go and meditate, and my thinking mind quiets down. And then I get in touch with a whole different way of being alive. And my breathing relaxes, my body relaxes a little bit, and I'm just here, and it's just nice to be alive and being present. Nothing needs to happen. And then I kind of remember, you know, you're looking for answers in this whirlpool of thoughts and ideas, and that wasn't the way out. In fact, to be caught up in the world of thinking, it's kind of like, can be at times like a maze that you'll never find your way out of. And it's a maze sometimes that comes with a lot of authority, a lot of seduction. Like, this is where we're going to solve our problems. This is where we're going to figure it out. This is where we have to, you know, have a better past or something. But to watch this kind of in meditation get quieter, quiet enough, and see, well, that's not so important, or that's not the way forward. Now that I'm more settled and the mind got a little bit quieter, now I have a whole different perspective on the issues. Now I see that there are deeper, kind of, for me, embodied values that want to come forth in the situation that shows me the way that I couldn't be in touch with when I was lost in the swirl and the clouds of my thinking. So this clarifying of attention, so we're not swirling and caught up in the world of thinking, is a huge part of this journey of mindfulness. And this, again, of course, clearly is not meant to denigrate thinking or say that thinking has no role, but is not to put thinking in the driver's seat, or not to have the thinking be the only thing that's going on, the maze that we're trying to figure out and find our way with. And so to get out of that maze of thinking, in this mindfulness practice, we're using this attentional capacities, all the different capacities we have to start seeing, feeling, sensing, recognizing what's actually happening in the present moment. And partly it helps us to see more clearly what is happening, and there's wisdom that comes from that, but also it's not only about seeing what's happening, but using our capacity to recognize what's happening to begin clarifying the field of awareness so that a stronger and stronger sense of present moment awareness begins to be present, begins to arise or settle in or kind of wash over us or something. And in order to do that, the Buddha describes a journey. Over and over again in the path in these ancient texts, you have a clear sense of a journey, a path. That's a classic model in Buddhism, the metaphor of the path. I like the idea of a journey that we follow and go along. So it's not a static process. It's not like you push a button and then suddenly you're there and that's it. But rather we put ourselves on a journey and involves patience and challenges and joys and hiccups and going backwards sometimes and all kinds of things in the journey. But it's still a journey that slowly we're developing and growing as long as we stay on the path, as long as we keep walking. And the sense of the journey of Satipatthana, of this Four Foundation Mindfulness, is seen, I think, very nicely in the refrain that Tara mentioned last night. The refrain that happens 13 times in this text is a very important part of it because it is one of the primary ways where it describes what the purpose of this mindfulness practice is that the Buddha had in mind. There could be many purposes for mindfulness, and each of us will have our own purposes, but it's nice to have some sense of what the purpose that was originally designed for, because maybe if you understand what it was designed for, then you can better understand the rationale and the reasons for doing this practice as it's being described. And maybe you can find that something resonates inside of you with the purpose that Buddha had for this practice. So the refrain, the journey of the refrain is a four-step journey. And this idea of a four-step journey appears repeatedly in the Satipatthana Sutta. But the four-step journey here is involves four different phases of attention being developed. And the first phase is being aware of the body internally and being aware of the body externally. No one really knows what this means, but that's okay. But the idea of being aware of the body internally and externally means some kind of 360-degree awareness, using the faculties of awareness to be able to perceive the body kind of maybe from the our ability to mentally observe the body, but also the ability to mentally or experience the body, physically experience the body. We have this wonderful body. I can look at my hand, and I can feel my hand from the inside. Looking at it is kind of like from the outside. I could close my eyes and kind of observe or perceive or know the sensations of my hand from a distance. And I can also be right in the middle of my hand, sensing and feeling it. Both of these are valid ways of experiencing, and both of them, as present moment ways of experiencing, of knowing, begin strengthening our capacity to have present moment awareness. And so we begin this journey, we're just starting to show up for our experience, be with our experience, know it in all the different ways we can know it as present moment experience. As we settle into this, and we develop some concentration, the distracted mind begins to settle away and we're not caught up in thought so much, and it becomes easier and easier to be here. Then at some point in this, maybe not soon, but at some point in this four-step process journey, what gets heightened is how there's a lot of change going on all the time. There's constantly things shifting and changing. What gives our experience some sense of permanence is the thinking. We think our way into, like, this is how it is. If I see a friend one day and then the next day, I might, by looking at my friend with my ideas of who the person was yesterday, because my thoughts and ideas of my friend don't necessarily change as quickly as my friend is changing. And the person has changed emotionally, psychologically, all kinds of ways has changed over 24 hours or changed over 5 minutes. But if I'm operating on the old thing, like maybe the person, my friend said something unkind and mean, and so now I think this is a mean person. So the next day I show up, like this is a mean person. But, the person's had a whole transformation in 24 hours and now the person's kind and, I'm still looking at the person, the old way. So there's a way in which our thinking solidifies our reality. And as this thinking quiets down, as we stop kind of investing in thoughts and thinking that's where it's all at and that's what's most important, and we begin to kind of let it recede a little bit to the periphery of experience, then we start noticing that without the thoughts that are reifying or solidifying things, there's actually a lot of change happening all the time. The sensations we experience, the thoughts, the emotions, they're shifting and changing and moving and morphing, and maybe in subtle ways, but in all kinds of different ways, they're kind of constant change. As we settle down more and more, this becomes a salient part of the journey, that things are arising and passing. The Buddha describes it in this refrain, then one becomes aware of things arising. Things just appear. It's an amazing mystery or wonder that things appear, in awareness and experience. Why should you be aware of anything? Which universe did you get off on that you got onto a universe where there's awareness and consciousness? And then all this stuff happens without your willing it and without your choosing it. Someone coughs in the meditation hall. You weren't planning to hear the cough, and suddenly there's a cough sound. and just appeared and rose. Wow, there's a sound. It's kind of a miracle. We have all this complicated apparatus that allows us to hear a cough. Wow, it's amazing. And then there's, maybe traffic out in the road. There was a trash truck this morning that came by, and there's all this beeping and engine sounds. And then at some point it's gone. You didn't make it go away, it just stopped. And so there's a way, and as attention gets more and more acute in the present moment, not only we see change, but we see the kind of miracle of things just, these things that just arise, and that they pass. And that can happen internally with ourselves as well, that we were sitting here minding your own business, and suddenly there's an itch, or suddenly there's this and that, you know. I sit down to meditate, and less meditation, the breathing was very relaxed. The next meditation I sit down, suddenly I'm aware what's arisen is I'm contracted in my chest. You know, so I have two choices. I have many choices, but the two I'm thinking about now is I can say, this is bad news. This is a drag. It was better before, and I must have done something terrible that over the intervening time, and now I've kind of really blown my retreat, and I have this constricted breath, and this is like, I'm a bad person. That's one option, right? The other option is, wow, what's arisen, what's occurring now in awareness is a constricted breath. That's what this tremendously amazing, miraculous, seemingly apparatus that evolution has created for us of being aware of anything at all, it's become aware of a constricted breath. That's what's arisen. I mean, it's, you know, so which of those two do you want to choose? You know, which universe do you want to live in? This is bad? Wow, this is a miracle. And so here it is. Wow, constricted breath. And then it was constricted for a while, and I was just minding my business, being with it all, and then at some point I realized it was gone. Wow. How does this happen? What is, you know, just... So the seeing things arise and pass, the Buddha says. So first he says, we notice things arise, we can notice things pass, and then he says, we notice things arise and pass, almost like they're happening simultaneously. They're very quick in the changing nature of things. So that's the second step of the four-part journey. The third part of the journey is that as the concentration and mindfulness get stronger, at some point, things get really simple. And it becomes pretty easy to just stay in the present moment. And at some point, there's the attention is such that we have bare knowledge, very simple knowing of what's happening. So if I have a constricted breath, I just know it, oh, constricted breath. Bare knowledge, bare knowing, just constricted. Just tightness. As opposed to, you know, there's tightness. And then this means that I'm bad, and I wonder if I should go to the doctor, I wonder if I'm having a heart attack. And in any case, they shouldn't have served the brownies, because certainly I have ate too much of the dessert, and that's what made me all contracted. And I spin out, right? That's not bare knowledge, simple knowing. Just stay simple. Stepping out of the maze of thoughts and drama that we can create in our mind. And at some point in this journey, we're moving in the direction where our attention gets simpler and simpler and simpler. And it's described by the language of bare knowing, just what we can know in the direct experience. And then they use the word sati, but it has a prefix called patisati. I love saying patisati. And pati is a reflexive prefix, which means that something referring back on itself. And so it's the sati which refers back on itself, that knows itself. And so the sati, the mindfulness or the awareness, is so strong that it knows that it's there. Awareness aware of itself. Bhikkhu Bodhi translates this sometimes as lucid awareness. I love the expression. It's so lucid because we see it. So there's the attention has become so still, so simple, there's bare knowing, and the attention has become lucid. That's a third step in this process. When we get to that level of simplicity And we're that at ease with ourselves, that at home in ourselves and not in our thoughts so much, then the mind is relatively equanimous. And that equanimity allows the mind to release itself, allows something to dissolve, resolve, something to let go in the very deep structures of the mind and the heart. And that's hard to do if there's a lot of, you know, swirling and desires and aversions and thoughts and fears and kind of swirling around. But when things are very, very simple, and then something lets go, and then the fourth step, the Buddha describes, that a person then becomes independent. Literally the word means more like not dependent on anything and not clinging to anything in the world. And this idea of coming to a radical degree of freedom where we're no longer dependent on anything for our happiness, for our freedom, for our being at homeness, our peace, is a remarkable experience. There's always ways in which we're dependent on the people and the world around us, so we don't want to, you know, push this too far, make it too absolute, otherwise we miss the profundity of what's being talked about here. There is an experience, a way of being, that has a quality of radical non-dependence, of independence, of freedom, that's characterized by not clinging to anything, not grasping to anything. And that's where the Satipatthana practice is going. It's bringing us to that point where we can have the experience of being not dependent on anything and not clinging to anything whatsoever. And that's called freedom or radical peace or something. And so that's as the attention settles and Satipatthana deepens, this is kind of the journey. Now, it's probably best that you don't try to, you know, use the power of suggestion or look for this to happen. It's best to let this happen on its own. It doesn't have to happen on this retreat or you recognize it this way. It happens in many ways, some ways that you don't recognize at first that you're actually following this journey. But this is kind of the classic journey of Vipassana practice. And so that's what we're trying to do, at least from the Buddha's instructions. And then we're using these different exercises to help us follow this journey. Now, the four foundations of mindfulness, there's another group of four, can also be seen as a little different description of the journey. It doesn't have to be seen this way, but some teachers like to see it this way. And this is a journey from what's most obvious to our experience and most kind of more on the surface. And it's a journey inwards, deeper and deeper inside. And so we start with the body, the experience of being embodied. There's different exercises around this body thing, and I'll talk about one of them today. But we start with the body. And the body is kind of like the most substantially obvious thing about us. You know, you can tap your body, you can see your body, you can, you know, touch it, you can bump into things with your body, and you have this body that you can feel. And if you sit the first day of a retreat, some people really know they have a body. There's no question about it. You know, knees, back, ache, headaches the first day, all kinds of things. The body will make itself very well known the first day of a retreat. So it's kind of like obvious. As we center ourselves in the experience of the body and settle into it more and more and relax into it, then at some point what becomes, it doesn't have to be this exact way, but the way this journey is described in the book, is we settle into the next layer of who we are as we go inwards. And that's the layer that's kind of the bridge between the body and the inner life. And that's called the vedana, the feeling tone. And that kind of exists on both sides, because this things being pleasant and unpleasant has little bit to do with the physical experience. If I get a thorn in my foot, I feel pain. But it also has something to do with how the mind evaluates that. And so it kind of encompasses both. And then And then as we settle into really this part of our experience, the pleasant and unpleasant, that, and really feel it more and more fully, and it, that gives us all kinds of other information that then begins connecting us to the state of our inner state of being, the quality of our inner life. It's usually called the mental state, citta, but this citta is much more than, you know, to just limited to mind or mentality. It's probably not doing it justice. I like to think of it as the quality of our inner life, the state of our inner life. And so as we settle deeper and deeper in, and we're no longer distracted by the outer world, no longer so caught up with settling our body and dealing with our body stuff, and we're moving inward, at some point what stands out in the highlight is the mental states we're in. And we start becoming the caretakers of our mental states. No one else can be the caretakers of our inner mental state or the quality of our inner life. And then learning how to be the caretakers, the custodians of our quality of our inner life is part of this journey. As we take care of it and really experience, get to know the quality of our inner life better and better, at some point we start seeing how the tricks are done. We start seeing how clinging and grasping and wanting lead to suffering, and how non-clinging and non-grasping and other things lead to freedom. And so then now we're down to kind of the operating principles or the deeper structures of the of our, you know, how we're actually operating down at the core of who we are, kind of. And we're seeing how these things operate there and the directions and the activities there that keep us either in bondage or move us towards freedom. And then, you know, we fall, that opens up then towards freedom. So these four foundations of mindfulness is kind of is movement, also a journey of settling, deepening, coming into ourselves. So we begin with the body, and in this particular Satipatthana Sutta, the first clear instructions about how to do this is to be aware of the breathing. And there's a four-step journey with the breathing as well. Kind of, you know, I don't know quite why it's always these four steps, but four, you know, four steps to it. But here also, this is also a journey. It represents that we have this capacity for deepening, or capacity for settling, or capacity of deeper insight and understanding of what's going on here. And I'm emphasizing this idea of a journey and this capacity we have a little bit as a carrot to encourage you that it, the whole journey is dependent on our capacity to be curious, interested by what's happening in our direct experience. That's the key. So if you're, you know, of course we might be thinking about the past or thinking about the future or fantasizing and all these things which are not direct experience. But what we try to do is we try to turn it into direct experience by seeing it, oh, this is thinking, this is in the present now, this is present moment thinking about the past. This is present, in the present I'm thinking about the future. In the present I'm fantasizing. To really see it, experience it, we keep coming back, oh, this is the present moment. This is the present moment experience. That's the key. So this journey, that's that's the path, or that's the door into this journey, is really here, the present moment experience, now. So with the breathing, many people, many different religious traditions and other places will use the breathing as a way of settling down, calming the mind, and really kind of arriving into the present moment much more. And so this text begins with this. And the first of the four steps is just to know your breathing, to recognize the fact that you're breathing, to tune into your breath, to establish your attention in your breathing, and get to know the breathing better. As a direct experience in the present moment, what is your breathing like? It starts by being aware, and the text says, of a long breath, long inhale, knowing it as a long inhale. A long exhale, knowing it as a long exhale. So I think many times people first sit down to meditate, their breathing is kind of coarse and big and something, you know, it's coming and going. And maybe we've had a busy life and we've been active, and so we're still catching our breath, something. And As people relax and settle in, the breathing becomes calmer and quieter, and there's a movement towards the breath becoming slower, and in some ways also shorter, not these big breaths anymore. And so the second step of this journey is recognizing that's happening, to recognize that now the breath has gotten shorter, the in-breath has gotten shorter, and we know it, this is a short in-breath. The out-breath has gotten shorter, and now we know it has gotten shorter. So we recognize that this transition of settling in, deepening in, and by really being here, not being in our thoughts and our concerns and our worries, but being willing to put aside temporarily many of our preoccupations so that they don't keep us stirred up and agitated. And we settle in, focus here on the breathing. The breathing shifts and changes. And a lot of this is coming back over and over again to the breath, trusting the breath, entrusting ourselves with the breathing. Breathing. Then the third step of this breathing journey is as we settle in and the breathing becomes quieter, what tends to happen is that we become more aware of our body. The body begins standing out in highlight more. The sensations of the body. And one of the things that becomes clearest for many people is the tensions of the body, the aches, the holding patterns in the body. Start noticing the shoulders are tight, or the belly is tight, or, you know, there's constriction in the chest, or, you know, all kinds of places. The back maybe has, you know, its own issues about, has to do with. And the things that the Buddha says here is to pay attention to what he calls the bodily formations, sankharas, which are the ways in which the body presents itself, mostly tensions and pains and aches and stuff like that, that are there because of how what the mind does. The mind is not so innocent, most people's mind, you know, what it does. So if we are constantly afraid of something, constantly chewing on something we're afraid of, resentful of something, it's all too easy for that somehow to pull the puppet strings into our shoulders, our belly, our face, and things get tight and tense. I find that it's remarkable to sit and get somewhat relaxed in meditation, and then to have some kind of concern arise in my mind, and then feel the subtle little shifts, micro muscles in the body that tighten up as I kind of do this and start having these thoughts and these ideas. I find it remarkable to have a busy day and go about my day, do many different things, and then the end of the day sitting down to meditate, and then I experience the toll of the day. The effect of being constantly busy, involved in doing something, has been translated into the shoulders tense, the tension in my torso, sometimes around my eyes and my jaw. And wow, that's the consequence of just being so busy and doing so many different things. And so then I sit and meditate, and that's then it abates and settles and sometimes. And on a retreat like this, we go through layers and layers of this. People will find that sometimes maybe they relax a little bit, and then they get to a layer and they feel all this tension in their body that they didn't even know they had. And some people think they're going backwards. I was getting relaxed and now I'm more tense than I was before. We're not more tense than before. It's just that we're touching into a layer of our being where there's all this tension that we haven't been in touch with. And then that can relax, and then we can discover deeper, deeper and deeper places. There's kind of this journey of going deep. It has its revelations about all these layers of holding patterns and tightness and tension that can be there from a lifetime of experience and things that are going on. So to have a lot of compassion and a lot of care, a lot of gentleness, and a lot of understanding that this is part of the process. It's not a mistake. It's not a problem. And so the Buddha said, as we do this breath meditation, staying with the breath, staying with the breath, at some point we start becoming aware of the effect our life has had on our body, the mental formations. And then remarkably, what he says that we're supposed to do is experience it. Feel it. Be with the felt sense of it. He doesn't say you're supposed to fix it. He doesn't say you're supposed to get rid of it. He doesn't say you have to judge it or judge yourself become it, but he has this remarkably simple instructions, kind of like enter into it and really experience it. Allow yourself to feel it fully. And it offers a tremendous respectful thing to our tensions and our whole life and how it's unfolded, to really go in there and get to know it well. To really, it's like, you know, like having a friend who really wants to know you, so they're really there to listen. Be your friend to your body and to what goes on, and really listen and be there and hold it and be present for your experience. Take time. So the Buddha said, breathing in, one experiences the mental formations, the whole body, and breathing out, one experiences this body that we have and these tensions. Then after doing that for some time, the journey goes into the fourth step. And the fourth step is, as we experience this body of ours and experience these mental formations, the consequences of how we've been living our lives and our body and life experiences, then at some point it says, then relax the body. The usual translations have tranquilize the body, tranquilize the mental formations. But tranquilizing for me is not like, you know, I like tranquility, but tranquilizing, I don't have good associations with that word. And, you know, so you tranquilize the animals, you know, that's not good usually. So so I liked relaxing. So as we start feeling these tensions and stuff, then what we're allowed to do is, without making it a big project, we're allowed to relax and relax intentionally, soften. Soften the belly, soften the shoulders, the eyes, the face. If you make it your constant project, you just make yourself agitated and you won't settle in. I've had the experience of trying to relax and, you know, having some success, relaxing. It just like seemed like, but it just seemed like it was over and over and over again. And then I said, I got to stop doing this. And I'm just going to stay with my breathing. And I gave myself over to my breathing. And then I relax deeply. It's almost like sometimes we can relax most deeply if we stop being concerned with things and really get concentrated and leave everything alone. In the concentration of really simple and letting the mind become quieter, then something can relax. So there's two different ways of relaxing. One is to do it intentionally, and one is just kind of do the breath meditation and allow it to happen. So that's the beginning of this satipatthana, and a way of starting to cultivate heightened sense of awareness, attention to the present moment, is by using the breathing as an anchor, as a way of coming back. Your breathing and your experience of your body is always in the present moment. And so we're using something which is reliably in the present moment to train the mind, to support the mind. Just be here. Just be in your present moment experience. Some people will complain at this point and say, well, I have important things going on, important things to think about, be concerned about, important feelings, important things. And this thing of the body just kind of seems like it's not really where it's at. So that's okay. So whatever is most important for you, that's more important than that, whatever that is, notice how it's being experienced in your body. So if you have a lot of preoccupations about something really important about your life, that's okay. But what does it feel like physically to have those preoccupations? Because with strong thinking, the puppet strings are reaching out and tugging on our eyes and our forehead and our shoulders and our belly and all these places. And, you know, what does it feel like? And then breathe with that. Just feel. So feel the physicality of your big concerns. It's fascinating. So it's a way of respecting them. You're not dismissing them or ignoring them, but you're also not letting them take you out of the present moment by feeling, experiencing, oh, this is how it is in the present. This is how it is. I'm thinking a lot about the future, but thinking about the future, I can, you know, there are times when I felt the exhaustion or the weariness of all this thinking that I'm capable of doing. And when I start feeling the weariness, oh, wow, why would I want to think so much when it's so tiring to think? But until we're often kind of lost in the thoughts, we don't feel the toll. What's going on? So we use the breathing. It's a classic example, it's a classic practice. It's not the only exercise given in the Satipatthana Sutta, so it doesn't have to be what we practice, but in terms of the journey, this breath, for many people, is a really good kind of first stage of the journey. And often it's one of the reasons we do instructions on breathing the first day is to keep it as simple as we can the first day. And just come back. A lot of it has to do with coming back, showing up, being patient, learning to be gracious with the challenges of the first day. Just keep showing up with our body, with the breath, here. And then we try to cultivate and develop and utilize the attentional faculties that we have. And I'd like to end with this thing about the attentional faculties, because this is really the toolkit that we're using for this practice. So it's possible we can be aware, be attentive in different ways. Sometimes we could observe. You can just settle back, like lean against a tree, and just watch your experience. Don't interfere with it. Hold it at a distance, and just watch how it is. Sometimes with very strong, difficult emotions like fear, an exercise that's sometimes given is ask people, far away do you have to stand so it feels safe to observe your fear? Oh, you know, that hill half a mile away. If I'm that far away, then I can observe it. So just to observe it from a distance, that's fine. So to observe it is not to be in it, but kind of be a little bit separate from it. But in that separation, to be, to learn how to be peaceful, equanimous, non-reactive, just to observe it without getting complicated and trying to do something with it. It's a powerful thing to do. Many religious traditions talk about becoming the observer as being a very freeing kind of thing to do. And the Buddha, in the Satipatthana text, he uses that language of observing for some of the exercises. We observe the four foundations of mindfulness. Observe the body, observe the feelings, observe the mind states. The other thing we can do is we can experience. And as in this breath exercises, it says experience the whole body, experience the mental formations. And the word is to really, to experience means to, it's this almost similar word to the word feeling. And it's, you know, vedana. And it's to be in the felt sense of the experience. So it's not like be in the experience as if you're, you know, at Disneyland and just kind of knowing a Disneyland experience, you know. It's more like the immediacy of the felt sense in this moment here. What's the felt sense, the sensing of something. It's like the sensing of something. So one of the attentional capacities we have is the capacity to sense something. And sensing is much more intimate than observing. And sometimes it feels so good and so right to get really close and intimate and sense and feel what's going on. And to, you know, really be close, maybe be inside the experience and sensing it from the inside. And that's how we enter the present moment. That's where we respect the situation. And that can feel so good because of not having the distance and not being the observer and the self that's experiencing it. And that disappears and collapses in the direct experience. Both are useful. Both have their place. Sometimes one, sometimes the other. Other aspects of the of knowing that the faculties, abilities we have, the Buddha emphasized in this text, is the faculty of knowing. Knowing and clear recognition. We have the capacity to really know what's happening in the present moment. When I did Zen practice, I was very much a being practice, and at some point I'd done a lot of Vipassana practice and I was still doing Zen, and I would get into this very beautiful state of being, just being and being present. But I recognized it as being a plateau, and I knew there was more possibilities. And so what I learned to do What I called on then was what I learned in Vipassana, was I sprinkled into that the capacity to know, to recognize what's happening. And once the very relaxed knowing and recognition of what's happening moment by moment happened, then the process of the journey went deeper and deeper. And the knowing was needed to go really deep. And so the knowing is this very simple, present moment recognizing of what's happening. And that, so the knowing, this, you know, this is warmth, this is coolness, this is tingling, this is a thought, this is fear, this is joy, this is an in-breath, this is a short in-breath. It's kind of, you know, from an ordinary person walking on the street and going around to have important things to do in life and get ahead in life, this is pretty boring. You know, like what did, well, you know, you tell your some of your friends at work, like, yeah, I sat there and I knew that I was breathing in, I knew I was breathing out, and I had an itch and I knew I had an itch, and then there was a sound and I knew there was a sound. Just knowing, they're going to look at you like, what are you doing? Were you wasting your whole week? You could have had the Disneyland experience. And but hopefully, as we get into it, it feels so satisfying because we're not swirling and whirling in the agitation of all these thoughts and ideas we have. We're settling into this place of home and being connected and being here. And find the final kind of attentional capacity that's talked about in this text, which is particularly important for mindfulness practice, is what's called clear recognition, or the clear knowing. And this is when we are with something, and the idea is to know it so clear, really know it. I've kind of done this knowing practice, and I do it too, sometimes too casually. It doesn't really, I have to really know. So I can be thinking, and I'm thinking, I know, I recognize I'm thinking, and let go, come back, recognize I'm thinking, I'm kind of recognizing it. And I just keep thinking. But to actually stop and turn, look thinking right in the eye, and clearly recognize, I am thinking. This is thinking. And the way that clear recognition works is to recognize it so clearly what's happening that in the it's so strong, the recognition, that in the recognizing, you now become independent of what you're recognizing. So you know, it's like, oh, there's thought and blah, 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 thinking, blah, 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 thinking. It's like, that's thinking, thinking. And you kind of, sometimes I use mental notes, thinking, I'm really thinking. Occasionally I've experimented with kind of being really loud in the inner voice, so I'd really get the message, I am thinking. And then only then do I really separate myself from it, and I'm no longer investing in it and feeding it. Clear recognition, thinking. Fear. Oh, that's fear. And not be in the fear or stuck in the fear or reactive to the fear, because the clear recognition is so clear and precise and strong. Fear. Or pain. Pain. Or it's a little unpopular to do it for what I'm going to say next, but you can do it here too. It's actually good to do it if you feel pleasure and joy. Imagine pulling yourself away from that. And not being caught in that. Oh, joy, joy, joy. Just really recognize it. And there is a kind of joy that comes from this clear recognition. It's the movement towards this freedom. It's moving from not clinging, not being stuck and caught what's there. So sometimes we observe. Sometimes we experience and feel, sense. Sometimes we know. And sometimes we really know. Clearly recognize. All in the service of waking up. All in the service of developing a clear and simpler awareness in the present moment. Nowhere else but here, nowhere else but now. But awake and interested and curious, fascinated, maybe in awe at this amazing miracle that we have to be aware. A miracle that we forget when we get caught up in our concerns. But if we're not caught in the concerns, maybe we can kind of discover this, the home we have, our native country, that's always here, and a place that's safe to be, a place to experience a very dramatic and healing kind of safety, here, aware and present in the present moment. So with that, I hope that this talk would give you a little bit of encouragement to be interested and curious about what is it about the attention in the present moment that's so great. And what is it? And explore it. Be curious. What is it? What's going on here? How do I do this? What is it to really show up? It's a fascinating journey. It's a wonderful journey. May your journey last your lifetime. Lifetime of attention. Thank you.